Well, Sean, it's the At the Rink podcast, but we're not at the rink because there's no ice in the rinks anymore. The season is over, but here we are in lovely and steamy, burning hot Las Vegas. And where else would you rather be? NHL awards tonight, Thursday night. NHL draft at Sphere, Friday, Saturday. Can't wait to get in there to see what this is all about at Sphere in Las Vegas for the draft. So the season is over, but we're not done, Sean.
No, we're far from done. And by the way, this place is just, it's like the surface of the sun right
it
now.
It is hot.
Even the Vegas people are complaining that it's too hot. They're like 10 degrees above their norm. And we walked home from dinner last night. We had a fantastic dinner with our friend Brian Slick. We walked home from dinner last night. It was like a blast furnace.
It was. It was a windy walk, and it was about 110 degrees of wind coming at you. But listen, we're in Las Vegas. We got the awards. We got the draft. But we have to wrap the Stanley Cup final. It was an epic Stanley Cup final. We did see history. We almost saw more history. The Florida Panthers find it. Sean, it's Thursday. It feels like forever ago already that Game 7 was. And it was only Monday. But it was a 2-1 win for the Panthers. They got back to playing Panthers hockey. And they get the Stanley Cup. And I'll be honest with you. It would have been an unbelievable story had the Oilers managed to pull off the reverse sweep, first team since 1942 to do that, you know, in the Stanley Cup final, would only be the second team. But I also looked at it and I'm like, you know what? I was happy for the Panthers too, because the last thing you want to be is that team. Paul Maurice, that would be his legacy. Sergei Bobrovsky, that would be his legacy. And now, instead, Bobrovsky's probably a Hall of Famer. And Maurice is probably a Hall of Famer, too. One win might have changed everything for them.
One goal.
Sam Reinhart goal.
That's the difference. And the series was so fine. Like, everything in it was so fine. And you know, good for Florida, because everybody left them for dead. Choke artists.
Yep.
You know, no heart. And they come out and they find their game in Game 7 when it appeared to be completely lost. The performance by Alexander Barkov in Game 7 was an all-timer for me. Everywhere Connor McDavid went, Alexander Barkov was on his hip. It was stunning to see. The season was on the line for the Edmonton Oilers. Connor McDavid had 3 shots, 6 attempts. Leon Draisaitl, 0 shots, 3 attempts. That's pretty good defense.
And that's how the Panthers got through round one, where they were a better team than Tampa. Kucherov did nothing in that series. Round two, they were a better team than Boston. Pasternak did nothing in that series. Round three, they're a better team than the Rangers. Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider did nothing in that series. Top first 3 games of this series, of the Stanley Cup Final, how'd they win? Draisaitl and McDavid didn't do very much, right? Then McDavid got going. Then it was like, then it became hard to stop him. 4 points in Game 4. 4 points in Game 5. Draisaitl had a big part of Game 6, right? And then they got back to playing Panthers hockey. And Barkov did what he does. And all of a sudden, it was back to being the exact same way they were playing. They relaxed. There was talk after the game of they finally just played with some freedom. They were. Sam Reinhart told me this after the game, and I love the quote. He said, for 3 games, we knew it was there for us, and you're hoping you get it. He said the hope went away in Game 7, and we just played. And it was a big difference. They just got back to playing Panthers hockey, and that's how they do it. And McDavid, they could have handed him the Conn Smythe Trophy before Game 6 in a press conference, and I would have been fine with it. I agree he's the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. But when it came down to it, it was the better team that won.
And that's always been the case with Edmonton. They've never been the better team because they don't have the pieces. They came close this year. They don't have the pieces around the best players.
Right.
They came a lot closer this year than they have in the past. They had some people step up. Look, it was their depth guys that carried them through this final until McDavid got hot in Game 4. It was guys like Holloway and Henrique, who's acquired at the deadline.
Yan Brown.
Oh, my God. Janmark. was like sandpaper. He was unbelievable. Yeah, Connor Brown, shorthanded. Like, these are the guys we were talking about. We weren't talking about Bouchard and Draisaitl and McKinnon and Hyman and Nugent Hopkins. They were all gone.
McDavid, you said McKinnon.
McKinnon.
If they put him on that team, they would have won.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, though. It's over. The Panthers, they were the better team. They could have won it in five. They could have won it in six. They could have won it in four. They could have won it in five, six. They won it in seven. Celebration goes on. It's been pretty epic to watch what they've done with the Stanley Cup around the beach and all that stuff. So they're enjoying it. But it's like a train that doesn't stop, man. We're already looking ahead. The Edmonton Oilers need a new general manager, right? Just today, we knew it was coming. Ken Holland was in the last year of his deal as GM of the Oilers. Mutually, they've decided to part ways. He is not going to be back with the Edmonton Oilers. They have Jeff Jackson, but they need a new general manager if Jeff Jackson doesn't want to be it. He's the hockey ops president. So the Oilers get to Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. In a few days, they need a new GM. The Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup. You know what? In a couple of days, they're going to have 11 unrestricted free agents from that team, unless between now and then they sign some of them. We're talking about Sam Reinhart. We're talking about Brandon Montour. Everybody that played on their fourth line. Vladimir Tarasenko, who had a big role in that series and a big role on this team. So it goes on pretty quick. New GM, all these UFAs in Florida. I hope they enjoy their celebration because, you know what? It's going to be a different team.
Yeah, and before we move on, like, I can't even say enough about Ken Holland and the job he did with this Edmonton team. He took so much heat for every move he made, and he put them within one goal, one period of winning a cup that they probably didn't have a right early in the year to even think about, right? He was brave and made the coaching change early on to a coach that had no NHL experience. Henrik was a huge trade deadline acquisition, paid off in the playoffs. Some of the other moves he's made, I mean, obviously Hyman was one of the best moves ever. He's done a great job. He did a great job with the Red Wings for decades. Like, probably one of the top five GMs in this game ever. And his counterpart, how'd you like to be Bill Zito? Right? You win the cup. Poor Bill Zito looked like he was going through his own personal hell.
Yeah.
Through games five through seven. They win the cup. Time to party. Oh, I have 11 free agents to sign. That party ends pretty quick.
It does.
Matthew Tkachuk is going to be driving his golf cart around, pouring beers from the roof of the elbow room, jumping in the ocean. Bill Zito's sitting at his desk right now in a frenzy of phone calls. There's no party for Bill Zito.
There's a party for him. There's a parade on Sunday, but he better get back to the office pretty quick after that parade because free agency comes at you on Monday, and we'll have it all covered. The draft, we're in Las Vegas. The draft starts Friday. At Sphere, Mike Morial from NHL Draft Class does the podcast with Adam Kimmelman. He's going to be joining us shortly to give us the big picture, the blimp view, if you will, of the draft. Talk a little bit about Macklin Celebrini and everything. So we'll talk about that and some New Jersey Devil stuff with Mike. But listen, before we get to that, there's a looking ahead aspect to this for the Panthers and the Oilers. But the one thing I did want to mention was you have this series where you have a team from Canada in Edmonton, you have a team from Florida, a non-traditional market. 16.3 million people watched Game 7. It was a huge audience for Game 7. I think it's the biggest that has been on record since they started keeping that. It was 16.3 million across North America, second most watched NHL game across North America since they started keeping those numbers since 2004. So what I think this series also did, Sean, is it turned some people who, I hope it did, turned some people who just casually watch sports into more avid hockey fans.
Yeah, I think it did. It reminded me a lot of the 94 series, right, between Vancouver and the Rangers. And there was this renaissance after that, obviously, because it was New York. And then Vancouver was a Canadian team. Like, it's the same kind of thing. But this was star-driven. There were stars. Like, yeah. There were players you want to see. You never know what Matthew Tkachuk's going to do, right? Connor McDavid is Connor McDavid, you want to watch him every day because he does something ridiculous. I mean, when you think about that goal that he set up for Corey Perry and he went through four guys, those are the things you just wait for, right? Draisaitl, Bouchard, all of these guys. I think it's the start of a new renaissance, right, for the NHL. It was the most watched, other than the NFL, it was the most watched championship game among the four major sports in the last 5 years. Baseball, basketball, the whole thing.
I hope it turned a lot of people who were just, like I said, just avid sports fans, casual sports fans, into hockey fans. There is another storyline, though, as we do look ahead, with the Edmonton Oilers. So they need a new general manager. Leon Draisaitl has 1 year left on his deal. And there's talk about the Edmonton. I mean, obviously want to sign him, right? But they want to get him done before he gets into the last year of that deal. Because you know how players are sometimes, right? I'll negotiate up until a certain point. I don't know what Leon Draisaitl is thinking, okay? He doesn't want to talk too much about it at this point. He still has another year, so you understand that. But players can also be like, hey, when the season starts, I don't want to negotiate anymore, right? I'm focused on that. I don't want to deal with it anymore. So they have a couple of months here to hammer out a contract extension with Leon Draisaitl, which I know the Oilers want to do. If that can't get done, Sean, could the Oilers trade Leon Draisaitl? And what would that trade look like?
Yeah, I mean, anybody can get traded. I mean, I think we've seen that, right? Look at the Matthew Tkachuk trade. I don't know if they want to get to that. And the one thing that kind of sold me that maybe that doesn't happen is his comments after the game about McDavid.
Yeah.
And about playing with Connor McDavid. And their window is still wide open. Some of their pieces, some of their complementary pieces are older. But everybody else is in their prime. Their goaltender is young, right? Bouchard's young. He's only going to get better. So, to me, their window's wide open. They have a young coach who clearly knows what he's doing. I mean, you looked at that matchup. It was a guy who had never coached in an NHL playoff game against Paul Maurice, who's coached in NHL playoff games forever. And he went toe-to-toe with him, outsmarted him for three games. So, you know, I think that window's wide open. I think Leon Draisaitl wants to win. That's what he wants to do. And him and Connor are best friends.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Crosby and Malkin, right? Like, are they best friends? I don't know if they're best friends, but they've played together for so long. And every time it came up, it was an absolute no-brainer that Sidney Crosby was staying in Pittsburgh. And he also, by the way, has 1 year left on his deal. So there's some conversations to be had there. But it was an absolute no-brainer that Crosby would do it. And it was always a question of, what about Malkin? And Sid always wanted Malkin. He took less.
That's going to be the question that's going to be asked of Leon. The management's going to have to go to him and say, look, we want you, but you're not getting market value.
And then it's going to have to be Connor taking a little bit less too when his deal is up in a couple of years. That's how you keep it together. That's what Sid has always done. Malkin did it. And now the cap's going up, so that's the good thing. But as the cap goes up, the prices go up for other guys. So that's going to be an interesting conversation that's had. I mean, there's a couple of guys in that boat that have the 1 year remaining on their deal. I mentioned Crosby's in that boat. Mitch Marner's in that boat as well. Igor Shesterkin is in that boat as well. And the cap's gone up a little bit here. It's going to keep going up more. They're going to have to value themselves out over the course of this year, but it's also going to have to be valued out over the course of the next year or two, or, well, not next year, the year after. And that's going to be interesting conversations that they're going to be had, because I think Leon wants to stay in Edmonton. I think he wants to keep playing with McDavid. I think they want to win multiple Stanley Cup championships together. They saw that they can do it. They saw how close they can get. And, you know, they're two goals away from doing it. And I think that team's going to stay really strong for a while. The only question is he willing to take a little bit less? That's one question. The other question is, does he want to go be the man somewhere? Because he's never going to be the man in Edmonton.
No, and look, let's say he didn't play well in the final, but let's put it out there. He was injured. He doesn't want to talk about it, but there was a hand injury and a rib injury, I think, going on there. But after being in Edmonton for far longer than I thought I was going to be in Edmonton, that trip back for game six was not the most pleasant experience I've ever had. Why would you ever want to leave there? The fans are crazy. Look, they didn't give up in game four, which I found amazing. You know, they're down 3-0. They didn't give up in game three.
Right,
they were down.
Game three.
And in the third period, they kept coming and kept coming, and they almost got all the way back. The crowd was amazing. When we walked out of there after game six, they hadn't won anything yet. And it was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. It was 3 hours after the game. They're driving down the main road there. Everybody's honking. There's parties in the street. Like, and then game seven, that was a quasi-home game for them.
Yeah, there was a lot of Oilers fans there. A lot on our flights coming down.
A lot in the elbow room.
A lot in the elbow room down there on A1A. Yeah, no, it's a great fan base. It's what they have, really. I mean, it's what they have. Everybody there rallies around the Edmonton Oilers. And this year, it was like every Canadian rallied around the Edmonton Oilers to try to get it done.
Not
every
Calgary.
Canadian. Not in Calgary. But everywhere else. So the beat goes on, the business goes on, and the draft is coming up. And as I mentioned before, we did talk to Mike Morial, our draft guru, who does the NHL Draft Class podcast with Adam Kimmelman. Here is our interview with Mike Morial. Mike, thanks so much for joining us. This is the annual Mike Morial segment before the draft, and we are here in Las Vegas. It's the Macklin Celebrini draft. A year ago was the Connor Bedard draft. So before we really dive into who comes after Celebrini, Mike, give us a taste. You wrote a heck of a story on Celebrini. It's on NHL.com. Just give us a taste of who this guy is and who the San Jose Sharks are going to be getting when they do. It's not if they do. It's when they do select him number one.
Well, thanks for that, Dan. I appreciate that. It's very kind.
It's the nicest thing I'm going to say to you.
Yes.
So from now on, I'm going to be rude.
Just a quick prelude to this. Like, we're in Vegas now, so if something happens, can we reveal it? Or no, which stays.
We're allowed to now.
We are allowed to.
Yes, we're allowed to. That's for outside the draft. Everything outside the draft, you can't. It has to stay in Vegas. Right.
But we're in Vegas, Dan. I'm telling you. Macklin Celebrini, we saw him yesterday at the youth clinic, enjoying himself with the kids there, age 6 to 12. The story on NHL.com, I had so much fun putting it together, talking to some of his youth coaches. Obviously, his dad, who's the VP of Performance and Health with the Golden State Warriors. So, obviously, Macklin, when he suffered the shoulder injury prior to his freshman year at BU, he had his dad there to assist him go through the rigorous training and rehab that he had to put forth. And he was able to do that. And to me, Dan, and that was the basis for my story, and something I haven't read or seen enough of. We all know about Macklin Celebrini, how competitive he is, how, you know, this kid will go through walls for his teammates. Is he a Connor Bedard? No. Bedard is a generational talent. Celebrini is a franchise player, and he's going to be one heck of a franchise player. He's going to be an NHL All-Star, and he's going to help. We expect this to be the San Jose Sharks for the foreseeable future. But what he was able to do in the offseason to be prepared as a freshman, as a 17-year-old freshman, to me, was incredible. Because then he goes on to win the Hobey Baker Award, Hockey East Rookie of the Year, Hockey East Player of the Year, all those accolades, what he was able to do. His teammates appreciated him. Jay Pandolfo, he said at his end-of-season meetings, all the players couldn't stop talking about Macklin and the leadership qualities that he had. He just drew the entire team into the game, into the fight, into the practice sessions. And that's what he's going to do for San Jose. And it was excellent what he was able to provide for BU this year.
One of the things that I enjoy that you guys do the most is comparables, right? Because everybody wants to know who the player is going to be. Who does Macklin Celebrini compare to?
My personal opinion, Sean, I like the Jonathan Toews comparable, because Jonathan Toews, well, for one thing, he played at Shattuck, just as Macklin did. But besides that point, Toews always had that serious demeanor about him, Captain Serious. Celebrini has that same type of demeanor, plays the full 200-foot game. They have the same, almost the same type body type. Some people have said he's kind of like a Sidney Celebrini is kind of like a Sidney Crosby light, not Sid all the way, but he has some of those, you know, that style of play, the way that he's built, the way he plays the game. For me, though, I like the Taves comparison because he just does everything for his team. He's a team first guy. Whenever you talk about the awards and the accolades that he won, he puts it to the side and wants to talk more about the team. Well, the awards are nice, yeah, but we didn't win any championships here. We didn't win a Beanpot. We didn't win a Hockey East. We didn't win a Frozen Four championship, and that bothers me a little bit. And that's the kind of stuff that I think Taves would say as well.
Let's fast forward 3 months. Is he playing in the NHL?
I think he is, Dan. I think so. When you consider what San Jose needs, and hey, let's face it, I think we all can agree here that if there was a team that needed the number one pick and an elite prospect,
yes,
right, the San Jose Sharks. And I was happy to see them get that number one pick, win the lottery on May 7th. And, you know, look, Celebrini is NHL ready. Pandolfo told me. He said, look, you know, he came to me. We discussed it at the end of the season. Should I come back? Do you think I should come back? Do you think I'm NHL ready? And Pandolfo said flat out, you're NHL ready. You can play in the NHL. You have the qualities. You have the makeup of a player that can go there and be productive as a first-year pro. So San Jose needs to get people back excited with their team. I think that he does play next year. Yep.
I think it goes back to college. If you're Macklin Celebrini, why do you want to go play for the San Jose Sharks next year? Right? I think kids are starting to learn that. Like, you get drafted number one for a reason. The team you're going to is not very good, and you're going to get your teeth kicked in. That's what happened to Connor Bedard this year, right? Like, he had to do everything.
It happened to Jack Hughes, too.
Yeah, so wait.
Well, I don't think so. I think San Jose I think San Jose is going to push the pedal to the metal a little bit here when they have that discussion. They're going to talk about, look, you're NHL ready. We believe in you. And not only that, it might be a little bit of a marketing thing here too, right? John, let's face it. They want to sell jerseys. They want to get people there. They want to get people excited. This is the number one overall pick. A lot of fans anticipate a number one playing in the NHL the following season. So this is a chance for San Jose to get the player they want. And not only that, they signed Will Smith. Will Smith could have went back to BC as well. But Will Smith signed, and I think that was another indication just to let Macklin Celebrini know we're signing an elite prospect here, an elite goal scorer in NCAA last season to maybe play Rod Shotgun with you or play alongside of you or, you know, the depth with these prospects and what they're trying to accomplish.
I think you're supposed to get your teeth kicked in. I think it's part of the rite of passage into the National Hockey League is to get your teeth kicked in a little bit and to move on beyond that. I also look at it and say, the San Jose Sharks know that they're in a rebuilding program here. If Celebrini, their star, the number one guy for them within this rebuilding program, is not with them, it sets them a year back. It's another year that they have to wait. It's going to be tough. We know that. It is for Bedard, right? I mean, it was for Bedard. Absolutely. It was for McDavid. It was for all these guys, right? But without going there, yeah, okay, he'll get to play 40 college games, and that's going to be great. He's dominated that level already. He's graduated from that level. It's time to go to the National Hockey League. You're right about the marketing, but more than that, there's a timeline, right? Mike Greer, the general manager, has a timeline. It can't take 10 years, right? It's got to happen pretty quick. So I think he goes there. But beyond Celebrini, all right, so we've covered that. We know who this kid is. Who's coming next? Like, you have the Levshinov, right, the going to Chicago, the big defenseman. Tell us about him. Tell us about the guys who are coming after Celebrini, because really the draft starts at 2.
It does. It does, Dan. And 8 defensemen were taken in the first round of the 23 draft. I expect that to be double digits this year, and we may see 8 or 9 taken among the top 20 this year. That's how deep it is defensively. I like Levshinov. Going to Chicago. Look, Chicago got their premier forward last year in Bedard, and they can go forward. There are a couple forwards here. For instance, Caden Lindstrom plays that power forward game. And then you have the kid from Russia, Ivan Demidov. Everyone's saying that he's on that comparable with Macklin Celebrini. Would he be a player that Chicago would be interested in? But for me, I like Levshinov. Go with the D guy. Go with that guy. And I call Levshinov kind of a tweener. He's a stay at home, but he also has the ability to really push the pace when need be. He had a great coach in Michigan State and Adam Nightingale, former NTTP coach. Obviously, developed him, helped him as far as the pushing the pace and what he needed to do. But this kid is a stay-at-home, solid D-man. He can get physical. He's got the right size. And, he's probably going to be the highest Belarus-born player ever drafted. Ruslan Sele was drafted by the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim at that time in 96, ninth overall. So, Levshinov's going to be Levshinov has the highest ceiling of any prospect in this draft, just because he's kind of raw still, but he has that size, and he certainly proved himself as a player at Michigan State. But there are several defensemen, as I said, Dan, that are very capable in this draft and are going to go very high.
The show is going to be a spectacle, right, at the Sphere. This is the first time we're doing that, and it's the last of the traditional drafts that we do. Next year it's going to be a little bit different. Who's going to steal the show here? Who's the dark horse that's going to steal the show?
It could be TJ Ginla going to Calgary if that happens, Sean. Obviously, TJ Ginla, he was at the youth clinic yesterday too, had a great time. And we all know about his dad, Jerome, the Hockey Hall of Famer, what he meant to the Calgary Flames. Now, recently, the last few days, I've been hearing rumors from some of the scouts that Teach could go as high as number 5 to the Canadiens. I had him going number 9 to the Calgary Flames, the first of the Flames' 2 picks in the first round. So I think that story, if that happens, that's going to be such a fantastic story. But there's this, too. For the first time, and I'd have to look back, but I can't remember this, and it probably has, I'm sure it's never happened before. We could have 2 Norway-born players chosen before any Sweden-born player in the draft. Michael Brancic Nygaard, a winger. He played in Sweden this year in their second division. Outstanding forward, did so many things, fast, elite, great hands. And then Stian Solberg, a defenseman who played in Norway, their top league this year. Right-handed D, big guy, stand up. A lot of good things, has the ability to maybe play in maybe 2 years, 2-3 years. I think 2 Norway-born players could steal the show if they do go.
Big picture, this draft, what are scouts telling you? Is it top-heavy, or are we talking deep? You were talking defenseman deep, right? I mean, I don't want to say how does it compare to last year's draft or the one before, but just what are scouts telling you about the depth within this draft?
I think overall it is a good draft, Dan. I think you're looking... Obviously, you got Celebrini, elite. Then you draw the line, and then I think you have maybe 11 to maybe 15 prospects that could be in that mix of top 6 down the road, maybe a 1-2-3 defenseman in the league, and then you're going into maybe a field of maybe 25 or 30 more players that could be a nice middle 6 role, could be a 4 defenseman down the road. So I think the draft is good. I think you're getting a lot of depth in this draft. Like I said, I like the defensemen. I think there are some centermen in this draft that can make an impact. There are some smaller-sized centermen that probably start out or maybe wind up playing wing at the NHL level, but still quality players. And we have 6 teams, guys, in this draft that have multiple picks in the first round. So to me, that means that you may see a lot of activity as far as trades go on day 1, because I think those second picks in the first round for those particular clubs are going to be very valuable in this draft.
Yeah, there should be fireworks. I mean, free agency is right behind the door. The cap's gone up a little bit, but there's still teams that are in trouble. So I think, you know, we're in the entertainment capital of the world. I think there's going to be so much entertainment on Friday and Saturday.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we hope, right? We hope, because remember last year, the first round, it was pretty quiet, right? It was just like there were no trades or anything. So the New Jersey Devils, Mike, they pick 10th in this draft, but that they may not pick 10th in this draft, right? I mean, there's a thought that their general manager, Tom Fitzgerald, has put that pick in play. And I think that makes sense. I really do. You also, in addition to the draft, obviously you cover the Devils for NHL.com, and they get Markstrom, so they get their goalie. Now they have Markstrom, they have Allen. You look at that division, Mike, it's open. It's up for grabs to be a top three team in that division. The Devils are a team that I think should take it. So does it make sense in your mind that that number 10 pick is in play?
Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And we talked about this right at dinner last night, guys. It's like, the Devils right now, yes, they're a young team when you consider the ages of some of these players. But isn't it ridiculous to think that Hischier is entering his eighth season?
Yeah.
Jack Hughes is entering his fifth season. So, yeah, it's a young team age-wise. But these are players that have been in the league and have reached the playoffs. And they want, you know, now's the time for them to put foot to the pedal and let's move forward. I mean, Fitzgerald said that, you know, in the offseason. I mean, we want to get our goal, our coach, number one. We want to get our goalie. He did that. And then he said, you know, that number 10 is still in play. I talked to him at the combine, and they might want to get that defenseman, that stay-at-home guy. You know, you look at some of the maybe the free agents or maybe a trade possibility. You know, you look at a guy like Brendan Dillon from Winnipeg, for instance. I know the age is there at 33, but that's the kind of player they need, a guy that will help a Luke Hughes along, a guy that'll help a Simone Nemitz along. And who knows where Seamus Casey is going to be, one of their top prospects in the system right now. Recently signed, played two seasons at the University of Michigan. So I think that's next on the priority list for Fitzgerald, is maybe looking for a stay-at-home. He's got the puck pushers right now, but he needs a stay-at-home, a guy that's going to be a little bit ornery in the corners, in front of the net, that type of guy. Yeah.
That's not what he's using his number 10 on.
Well, what do you think?
There's no way he's going to use it on that.
Are you thinking forward?
Yes. If you're dealing the number 10 pick, you better get another game breaker. You could get a big, burly defenseman anywhere.
It couldn't be. It wouldn't be a one-for-one swap either. This could be a 10. This could be a stay-at-home and a prospect for the 10 as well. I mean, we could be looking at that.
Maybe. I would just find it shocking.
Maybe.
I think that they're going to be active in free agency too. And I like,
yes,
you know, you look at some of the defensemen that could be available. Now you're talking about a stay-at-home guy, but you know, Brandon Montour's not that. We know that. He's not a stay-at-home guy, but like Brett Pesce is available, right? He could be that guy. Brady Shea, not exactly stay-at-home, but still a lot of experience, you know, a bigger guy. I think they could be active in free agency. I would actually be surprised, and you would know more than me, I would be surprised if they pick at number 10. They've done their drafting. This team has to win now.
Mm-hmm.
The window is so small for Tom Fitzgerald right now. I think he's done a terrific job.
He has.
But now he's got the goaltending.
Yep.
Right? And what was lacking last season? Health and goaltending. Right? Mm-hmm. Health you can't predict. Goaltending, you can have a better predictor on. They get the goaltending. They got to fill out the rest of it a little bit here, but they know that the window is right there. Look, I don't think Carolina is going to be as good. I just talked about two guys on Carolina, yep, who could be leaving, right?
Right.
In Pesce and Shea. The Rangers, I think, are going to be fine. They're going to be good. They have the great goaltender. We know that. But it's I mean, to expect the Rangers to be another President's Trophy winning team, I think that might be a little bit of a stretch at this point. The window, the door is open for the New Jersey Devils, right, Mike?
Yeah. The door. Yeah, it is. I mean, they lost Damon Severson before last season. They lost Ryan Graves, two players that played big minutes, did a lot of things that maybe don't show up on the score sheet every night, but those roles were never really filled. And then when Hamilton went down, the depth just shot down. So Luke Hughes comes in, Simone Nemitz, they have a year of experience. I still think a D might be the priority. I see your point, Sean, with a forward. Maybe a big grizzled forward would help as well, you know, with Hischier and Hughes. But I still think defensively they need someone big and strong to help out with the youth they have there.
Well, and I agree. I just think that's a free agent play at this point. I think if you're drafting that kind of capital, you need to get some sort of a game breaker. I don't think you could sell the 10 for Brendan Dillon. That's not going to go over with the fan base.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fair.
And I love Brendan Dillon, in case he's listening. Yeah.
No. I'm not sure what would be available, but you know, maybe a Jacob Chychrun or something along those lines, along with a prospect.
Yep. He's got a 1 year left on his deal. They'd have to sign him to an extension. He's another guy I did think of, and Ottawa's probably going to – is definitely looking to move him as well. So, listen, lots to be done here. Mike, we'll let you get back to your draft prep, draft coverage. Appreciate you joining us for a little time here.
Love it, guys. Thank you so much. See you in and around Vegas. We'll keep it quiet.
What a great interview with Mike Morial. If you're not following Mike and Adam covering the draft, you're doing it all wrong. I told Mike Morial the other day, he's lapping the field covering the draft. I've started calling him Secretariat. That's how good he is at covering the draft. His family loves it. They all call him Secretariat now.
That's pretty good. And his, by the way, and I mentioned it at the top of the interview with him, you want to learn about Macklin Celebrini, go read Mike's story on Macklin Celebrini. It is phenomenal. He gets so much insight from his parents, from his youth coach, from his college coach, from Macklin himself. The competitive drive that this kid has is incredible based on the story I read from Mike. So you want to learn about Macklin Celebrini, who's going to be the number one draft pick. He's going to go to the San Jose Sharks. Definitely go read that story.
Nobody does it like Mike. He's like the Gale Sayers of draft coverage.
Gale Sayers of draft
coverage. I'm dating myself
there. You are
there.
Dating yourself. Wow. Okay. So the draft is coming up. There's great stuff with Mike. He gave us really good insight on what's happening with the draft. Free agency is coming up too. That's happening. That opens Monday. The door to the free agency opens on Monday after the draft. So we'll all go home on I'm going to go home on a red eye Saturday night. A lot of people going home Sunday. And then we all reconvene in our home offices, if you will, Monday for the start of NHL free agency. And there's a couple of names there, Sean, that are really intriguing. Jake Guentzel is a very intriguing name. Steven Stamkos, if he gets to Monday, very intriguing. Patrick Kane, Jonathan Marchessault, a star right here, a Conn Smythe Trophy winner here in Las Vegas. He can get there. Sam Reinhart, as I mentioned, right? I mean, we mentioned they have 11 UFAs, the Florida Panthers, and Sam Reinhart, you know, is one of them. What's going to happen there? There's some really intriguing guys who can hit the free agent market this year. In the past, we've looked at the free agent market and we've gone, yeah, okay, there's some good players. Maybe there's like one guy. There's 5, 6, 7 guys on this free agent market, guys who could be changing teams from teams they've been on for a long time that really could be, you know, really move the needle here in free agency.
You know what the most intriguing thing is? Whether I'm going to be alive on Monday or not. This has been a long 3 weeks, Dan. But no, it is amazing. Like, can you think about Steven Stamkos being a free agent? I mean, he's been a Tampa Bay Lightning his whole life. Much like Sidney Crosby, he defines that franchise. He brought them from nothing to a perennial winner, established them as a marquee franchise. And I can't even imagine how crazed Toronto will be if he makes it to free agency.
Listen, I think that would be the worst landing spot for him.
Of course.
I think landing anywhere other than Tampa is not right for Steven Stamkos. To me, he is an icon on the sports scene in Tampa Bay. He should be a Tampa Bay Lightning for his entire career. That being said, Vinny LeCavalier was not. Marty St. Louis was not. Change happens. We've seen it, and we also know that if you want to talk about shrewd general managers, GMs that will make the hard decision like an assassin, just walk away from it, that's Julien Brisebois. We know he is capable of doing it. He is very good at removing the emotion and making a decision that he feels is in the best interest of the Tampa Bay Lightning now and in the future. Maybe that's the reason they haven't signed Steven Stamkos. Maybe that's it. I can't imagine him in another uniform, but as the days tick off the calendar here, it's getting closer to him being in another uniform.
You know who made really hard decisions? Bill Zito. You know who the Stanley Cup champions are? The Florida Panthers.
Right.
Think about the things that Bill Zito did. But when I look at Steven Stamkos, and if I'm Julien Brisebois, do I need him? Right? First of all, if I'm Steven Stamkos, why am I taking a haircut? Right? This is my last contract. I want my money. But if you're Brisbois, I can do a lot with that money. I haven't had any financial freedom in years. I've been making all these trades, robbing Peter to pay Paul, and now they're coming home to roost. And I could solve all my problems by letting him walk to free agency.
But you're letting one of your best players walk to free agency.
Is he, though?
Yes. He remains one of their best players. He is.
For the duration of the contract they're going to have to sign him to?
Well, I don't know what the contract is, right? So that's the question. I don't know. And what's the window? They're looking at winning another Stanley Cup. They want to win another Stanley Cup. So that window is not 5 years. That window is more like two, right? And I'm not saying Steven Stamkos is willing to take a two-year contract to stay there for that long. But if he takes a four-year deal and you win the Stanley Cup again within the next two, then it's worth it, right? Then it's a deal that you're 100%. Thank God we signed that one because we have one of our best players. And he still is one of their best players. And I don't think they go – here's why I think Stamkos eventually goes back to the Lightning. They don't go and get Ryan McDonagh again to then have Steven Stamkos walk. Now, you look at it and say, why are these two connected? It's because they went out and got another a veteran defenseman who they know that has won with them to come in to try to win again right away. And then they're going to let a guy who is a 40-goal scorer, their captain, one of their best players, just walk in free agency? If they do it, they'll replace him with somebody. Right? They'll sign some. Maybe they go sign Marchessault, who they used to have, right? Maybe they sign Gensel, right? We don't know. Maybe they sign Elias Lindholm or somebody along those lines, right? But it's an unknown. You don't know if that guy's going to fit. You don't know how that guy's going to fit in the room or in that team or with John Cooper and the system they play. Stamkos is the known commodity.
Yeah, but I would argue he's their fifth most important player at this point and going down.
Well, I mean, yeah, okay, you look at Vasilevsky, you look at Kucherov, Braden Point, you're probably looking at Victor Hedman too, right? So, but you could argue that 3 years ago, and he was still a huge part of that team, right? I mean, you could have made that case.
Yeah, I guess you could have, but I just see it as a diminishing value. And you know, we've had this argument about Crosby and Malkin before, and I was with Pittsburgh on that. But they run their business in a different way, right? Like, we all know who Julien Brisebois is, and the way that he runs his business, I don't know that it makes sense for him. There's no nostalgia.
No, there's no nostalgia. I just think he keeps them as a good team. And you look at the situation in the Atlantic Division right now. The Florida Panthers, the Stanley Cup champions, but we've talked about it, right? They have 11 UFAs. So changes are coming there. The Boston Bruins are a year older. Are they as good still? I mean, I think there's a culture there of winning, but are they still as good? Toronto, we know the question marks that the Toronto Maple Leafs have, right? Tampa's got question marks. Montreal's not quite ready. What's happening with Buffalo? Detroit, are they quite ready? Ottawa's not. The door is open there for Tampa Bay. It remains open. It's not like all these teams are lapping them, and they're just trying to. In Pittsburgh, they were lapped, right? And now they're 2 years out of the playoffs, and we don't know what's coming on. It's still there for Tampa. That's why I think if you can get Stamkos on a 4 year deal, but you're looking at the first two, really, I would do it.
Well, you're not Julien Brisebois.
I'm not Julien Brisebois. The other one to look at, I think, too, here is if you look at free agency. The Carolina Hurricanes are an interesting team in free agency. Eric Tulsky's now their full-time GM. Don Waddell left. They have a lot of big decisions here. They've got a lot of different things here. They've got Jake Gensel, who's a UFA, right? We know that. Brady Shea, Brett Pesce, they're UFAs. What are they going to do with their goaltending situation, right? There's a question mark there. Marty Natchez might want a different role. I don't know how much Rod Brendamore loves Marty Natchez. Could he be traded? There's a lot of big decisions coming in Carolina, who for the longest time have been one of the top teams in the Metropolitan Division. I'm not saying they won't be again, but there's a lot of big decisions coming there too.
Yeah, I think they'll remain an elite team. I just think they have that culture and they have enough players to carry them, but they're going to change. And I would argue they have to change.
Yeah.
It hasn't worked for them.
That's why they're not an elite team. They're a good team.
Yeah, and Gensel was the change. Right? part of their problem is they could never score the big goal. You look at last year in the Eastern Conference Final, they lost four straight games to Florida, all by one goal. A couple of overtimes thrown in there. Any goal at any point changes that series, and they couldn't do it. So, but they have to fix their goaltending. The Rangers would have been home in the second round if the Carolina Hurricanes had a goalie.
I know. And is Kochetkov that guy? Right? They've been pushing back Kochetkov's ascension for a couple of years now. He feels like he's been a rookie for 4 years. Okay? And they like him, but at some point he's got to be handed the keys to be the guy. And maybe he is, maybe he isn't. We don't know. It's not Freddie Anderson. He's not the guy. He can play well for stretches in the regular season. When it gets to the big game, to the big moment, we've seen Freddie Anderson give up the big goal. And not just the, like, give up the goal. You're just looking at it like, oh, no, Freddie, right? That's what happened in Game 6 against the Rangers.
It's the backbreaker.
Yeah.
It's the goal that you feel like you can't come back from, where you're like, I've done everything I can possibly do, and then that happens.
They're a team to look at. We touched on the New Jersey Devils, obviously, with Mike. We'll see where the Rangers end up. But there's another team in the East, as we talked about, you know, within the Atlantic Division, we talked about Florida, right, and Tampa. Toronto has a big decision, a huge decision to make here. Mitch Marner, 1 year left on his deal, right? Marner's deal is so it's going to make or break, I think, the offseason here for the Leafs. Or maybe it won't, because maybe nothing happens. We've talked about this before. We've had Mike Zeisberger, our colleague, on, and I've brought this up. If I'm Mitch Marner, I'm not signing the extension. I'm playing out my contract. And then maybe I'm walking into free agency. I'm betting on myself is what I'm doing. Why would he bet on the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Because he likes it there.
Yeah, but again, he likes it there, and they may want to say, all right, we'll give you this contract. But if he goes and piles up points with the Maple Leafs again and they make the playoffs and whatever happens, right, they make the playoffs, he's going to get more money in free agency now next year than he will right now.
Yeah, if that's what you want.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If I'm Mitch Marner, that's what I would want. Because I think the Leafs need to break this up a little bit. It clearly hasn't worked. And I think Marner is the guy that could use a change. But here's the problem, and I've brought this up before. If Marner accepts a trade and signs an extension with another team, and the Leafs go on and they pull what the Edmonton Oilers did this year, and they come in and they roll through and they get into the Stanley Cup final and maybe they win, well, now Marner's the problem, right? Well, we got rid of that Mitch Marner, and look what happened for us.
If that's the case, right, if the Toronto Maple Leafs want to break it up, go tell them.
Tell them. You're right.
Go tell them and say, look, we're not going to sign you.
Yep.
We're not going to talk about it this year, and we're going to let you walk to free agency. And then, or we're going to trade you at the deadline. And then he gets to make his decision.
Yeah.
But if you have no interest in the player, don't let him wave in the wind.
I think they have interest in the player, but they also have interest in getting a top defenseman. They also have interest in figuring out their goaltending. They have a lot of interests, right? But you can't solve all of them. That's the issue. They have a lot of offense. We know that. Marner's a great player. I think he would go to another team and be a huge part of that team, just as he would be a huge part of the Maple Leafs. But it's a big decision, no question about it. So there's a lot of big decisions. I mean, Pittsburgh's got one. Sidney Crosby has a big decision to make. Does Sidney Crosby want to buy into 3-4 more years of the Pittsburgh Penguins with the rate that they're going right now? Does he believe, right? That's a big decision to make. The Rangers, Igor Shesterkin. This could just be a percentage of the cap contract. Boom, that's what he gets, right? But how does that impact what they do? Jacob Trouba is an interesting case there too. Do they look to trade him? Who's going to accept Jacob Trouba at $8 million per for the next 2 years, right? There's a lot going on here in the next couple of days.
We haven't even talked about buyouts.
No.
So, yeah, no, it's going to be absolutely mental. And you know, it's amazing with the season going so late the past couple of years. There is literally no time to breathe until you get to, like,
July 4th. Yeah. July 4th. We'll breathe on July 4th. So last thing before we do get out of here, and we have to go start our coverage of NHL awards, which are tonight. We're recording this on Thursday, and obviously the draft. Hall of Fame. So the Hall of Fame vote was on Tuesday. I'll give you the class, Sean. Pavel Datsyuk, Shea Weber, Jeremy Roenick, Natalie Darwitz, and Chrissy Wendell-Pohl get in as players. Coley Campbell and David Poyle in as builders. Datsyuk's a no-brainer to me. The rest in the player category, I'm not sure if there is no-brainers. I don't know. With due respect to Jeremy Roenick, I don't know how he's in the Hall of Fame over Alexander McGillney or before Alexander McGillney. And frankly, I don't know how he's in the Hall of Fame over Henrik Zetterberg. And I don't know that Shea Weber is a first-year eligible Hall of Famer. Really good player. Intimidating player. But do you look at Shea Weber as a first-year Hall of Famer? And what makes Jeremy Roenick a Hall of Famer this year as opposed to 5 years ago?
I don't know. First of all, what I want to know is why they make this announcement when they make it.
Yeah, that's a day after Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final.
Right before the draft.
Can't you do this in July?
There is a whole window where you can have all kinds of conversations about it. Look, it's in our podcast. It's an afterthought.
Yes.
And there is a ton of conversation you can have about it. It's going to be a great year, though, for the Hall of Fame, because our good friend Scott Burnside is going into the writer's wing of the Hall of Fame.
That's right.
And I couldn't be more happy about it. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I agree with that.
But
we're a little biased on that, too.
Yes. But I do have issues with Roenick and maybe Weber. When you take Weber's international experience in, I think it makes a little more of a case. But
Patrick Marleau had the same international experience. He also is the most games played all time in National Hockey League history. He has I think it's 566 goals. He's an all-timer for one of the 32 teams in this league. He also never won the Stanley Cup, and neither did Weber.
Yeah.
Did Roenick.
No. Roenick was an entertainer. I think that's a part of it. Those aren't decisions I would make, but the two builders.
Oh, I have no arguments there.
No brainers. David Poyle has done more for hockey than 95% of the people that have ever been involved in the game. His family, him, just complete class when you think of the things that he's done, the franchises that he's built, and everything that he's done. And then Colin Campbell, I mean, I got involved in hockey in 94, and he's been a constant since that day with the Rangers. You know, he coached the Rangers, and then we've worked with him at the NHL because he's been part of hockey ops forever. And rule changes and the steward of the game and all of those things, just a legendary career.
No question, I have no issues with the builders. Obviously, both of us have some issues with the players that went into the Hall of Fame, but I guess that's what makes for great debates. We have them every year. You're right. I wish we were having them in July because this would get so much more traction. Not the day after Game 7 and 2 days before the awards and 3 days before the draft. But that's why we're here, the awards and the draft. So, Sean, are you looking forward to getting into Sphere?
I can't wait to get into the Sphere. It's going to be fantastic. It's the first sporting event that's been there. I know the concerts that have been there have been amazing. We have some good friends that have been there. Somebody told me last night at dinner that you can't even explain
life-changing.
What it's like to be inside that building.
Yeah.
And you know Steve Mayer has some special plans. They've been working on this for a long time. So, you know, Mike Morial talked to the players yesterday, the prospects that are going to go through this, and they were like, I can't believe we're going into that building. Then our pictures are going to be outside on the Sphere and all the things that go along with it. It's quite a way to say goodbye to this version of the draft, because next year we go to the decentralized draft where everybody's going to kind of stay at home. There'll still be a draft somewhere, but there's just going to be one representative from each team. I love this draft. I'm going to savor every minute of it because I love the draft floor with 12 or 13 guys at each table, side conversations, the phone calls, everything. It's the best draft of all of them,
yep,
by far. And maybe when it changes, it'll be as good, but I love this draft. I'm going to savor every minute of the final iteration of it.
Yep.
This one.
I will too. And I can't say enjoy the hockey anymore because there is no more hockey to be played until next season. So what I'll say to end the podcast, enjoy the business of hockey.